broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. We're a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And this is the place where truth is our bitch. We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. You don't have to believe me. You can ask them. And this is Radio for Patriots by Patriots each and every solitary night. Off we go. Bob Green joins us from Fraser Foods this evening as we talk about the consumer reaction to the end of the debt crisis, if that's a way we want to describe it, the debt crisis or the debt ceiling bill crisis, more like it. We'll talk with Robert Green about that. In our next hour, we will discuss the Warren Jeffs case. And this is this guy that is a so-called religious leader, a cult leader from Texas, that they allege has molested or raped children and calls himself Jesus Christ or whatever. What is he?
No, he says he's a prophet. Yeah.
All right. Oh, he's a prophet. That's it. Yeah, sure. Okay, great. So we'll talk about that next time. He's a prophet. He's Jesus. What's the difference? At least in their minds. Coming up tonight, so we have those things. We also would like to tell you in our affiliate spotlight this evening, we have KFXR in Dallas, Texas, and KTOQ in Rapid City, South Dakota. Two great stations here along the way on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show Radio Network. We're also live with streaming video of the Phil Hendry Show Network, the Phil Hendry Phil TV in HD, I should say, which is on our website. So if you want to watch a video cast of our show, you can do that right now. You will see behind me the three goddesses of Oceania. Tonight, all hail Oceania. These are the you might say this is the Trinity, the Holy Trinity of our radio show. You have to see it to understand it. Also, I'd like to remind you, coming up on Sunday, this coming Sunday, August the 7th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I will be interviewed by the great actor and comedian Kevin Pollak on his Kevin Pollak's Chat Show, which he has every Sunday afternoon at 3, and that's at kevinpollakschatshow.com. You all know Kevin Pollak, right, bud?
Yeah, he was in a movie that they did with the Marines.
Yeah, man, what's the name of it?
What was the name of it?
The Good Men.
A Few Good Men. That was the one.
Yeah, that had Tom Cruise.
Right. He was in that. He's been in Avalon. He's been in a lot of great things. He's a very funny guy. He does a lot of impressions. He does a dead-on...
he does Captain Kirk.
He does Captain Kirk. He does Christopher Walken. So anyway, so Kevin and will be talking with me on Sunday. That'll be a lot of fun. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And, of course, you are always welcome to join us, as I mentioned here, online at philhendryshow.com. You can also join us on Twitter at twitter.com/realphilhendry. Robert Green joining us from Fraser Foods in Buena Park. Bob, how are you doing this evening? Are you still open?
Well, Phil, actually, we're not open, but we're having a little bit of a mixture for our employees tonight. It's the 43rd birthday of one of our managers, our produce manager, John Ludwig. And so we wanted to get together and have a little birthday party for him this evening.
All right. I wanted to talk to you, about the consumer reaction and how things are going in terms of business at your store, the reaction of consumers as to the end of this debt crisis, so-called, and the ongoing soft economy.
Yeah, well, so let's first of all start off, and I want to talk to you in detail about some of this, but let me first start off by saying to you, I don't think we're out of any recession. I think we're still in a recession. I understand, the ladies have moved to the other end of the room. If you ladies could move to the other end of the room. It's very crowded in here, Phil, and I don't have my office tonight because I've got my bookkeepers are in there getting some work done. But nonetheless...
So you don't think that the recession is over?
I don't think that we are out of the recession from the standpoint of, obviously we're not out of the recession from the standpoint of real robust growth. Now I know that they say a recession is contracting quarters two in a row. And I understand that technically we are still growing. But when you're growing at 1%, this is not a healthy growth rate. This is, you're barely making it. Now, when they announced that the debt deal was done, and keep in mind, Phil, that there was a lot of pressure, not just on consumers, there's pressure on business people as well. And when they announced that the debt deal was done, that did not necessarily take any pressure off of me. I don't know if it took any off of our customers.
You're being under pressure is being under the pressure of not having business at the levels that you're used to having it.
That is right.
And you've got to figure out, well, what do we do? How do we stimulate business in a soft economy? How do we get people through the door even though they're reluctant to spend money?
Well, no, I know all of that. I mean, I've been in business a long time. I know all of that. But, no, the pressure I'm talking about, when they announced the debt deal, they took away from me, for instance, I'll give an example. During the debt crisis, during the crisis leading up to this final resolution of it, I didn't know, and there were an awful lot of retailers just like me, I didn't know whether or not food stamps, for instance, were going to be backed up by the government. I had no idea whether the usual food stamps that people are bringing in from the Department of Agriculture, and so you're reluctant to take them. And as a businessman, it was a rare opportunity for me to send a message, I guess, to my customers and say, look, we're in this together.
And, right.
And we've got you're bringing in food stamps. I don't know if these are any good. And a lot of times I would take them and I'd tear them in half right in front of them. I'd say, this is what they're worth.
You would tear people's food stamps in half.
I would tear people's food stamps in half and look at them and say, you want to know something? You see these? These are food stamps. I know you brought them in. You understand that we may not fund the government. We may not have a fully funded budget. You understand that there are some things that may not get paid for. And some of these people understand and some of them don't. And so I try to explain. I'll say, you understand that, and you see people sometimes, their eyes glass over a little bit. And that's when I said, you know what, forget it. And I ripped the stamps, the food stamps in half.
Now, why would you do that? Why would you rip them in half?
Well, for one of the reasons I just told you, they're not going to be worth anything if they don't get a budget.
But I mean, in other words, that's not your job. You don't have to take them, I guess. I think you're supposed to take them, aren't you?
Why should I take food stamps if they're not backed up by the full faith and credit of the United States government? Are you kidding? And so why shouldn't I tear them up? I mean, that's my logic. But I can't even do that anymore because the debt deal is done. So you understand what I'm saying, Phil? The pressure is still on me. In fact, it's gotten even worse because now I don't even have the release of being able to tear. Hold on for just a minute. Would you ladies move it over to the other end because it's just coming through. It's coming through really loud. I apologize, Phil.
Well, you're having a birthday party there, and you know what? I apologize to you. I shouldn't even be bothering you while you're celebrating.
No. Bob Ludwig, I've known him for years. He's been our produce, been assistant manager, 20 years with our company. He's a wonderful guy. And I want to be here for him, but our other offices are crowded, but I'm just trying to get these women here. These are my checkers. Yeah, just the other end of the room. The other end of the room. You don't have to be standing here breathing on me. You don't have to be breathing on me.
Look at Bob. Do you want to handle that? And then we'll
hold on for a minute. Just, huh? That's great. I'll have some of the garlic dip. I'll have it all. You know, what I'm asking you to do now is to move it to the other end of the room. Thank you very much. Thank you. Can you believe this? It's like it's like I got to find a dictionary and some kind of a Martian I got to speak.
All right. Is everything comfortable?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
But let me just get back to what I was saying. What I'm saying is this. I don't even have the pleasure now, and I say that not because of anything personal. I say this because I don't even have the pleasure and the relaxation of tearing up food stamps in front of people. Do you understand?
So no, I do not understand. You're saying to me that you got pleasure out of tearing up food stamps because why?
I got pleasure out of tearing up food stamps because it was the first time in my working experience that I was able to look at a customer and I could say to them, you want to know something? The government may not be able to fund these. These have been holding you back long enough. Watch this. And I would either take out scissors or I would take out a razor or I would, I had one of those old-fashioned straight razors, Phil, if you ever saw them, the ones that the barber used to use on a strap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had one of those. I would unfold it. I'd say, have you ever seen one of these? And some of the younger kids would say, wow, that looks like the kind of thing they use in the horror movies and so forth. I'd say, yeah. and I would slice the food stamps up in front of the kid and in front of the mother.
And well, what are these people saying and what are they thinking when they see you slicing up these food stamps?
I would say to them, I'd say, look, this gives me pleasure to be able to do this for you. It takes a lot of pressure off of me so I can make a statement here in my own store that I'm sick and tired of looking at this. And I want to cut these food stamps up before I get sick and tired of looking at you. And I will say this, and but I love my customers, Phil. I don't want to be sick and tired of looking at them. So I say to them, you come in here with your food stamps. Well, guess what? The government may not be able to back them up. I'm sick to death of looking at food stamps. Wouldn't you rather give me something that had a picture of Abraham Lincoln on it?
And I can't believe, Bob, and I've known you for a long time, I can't believe you're saying these things to longtime customers.
What do you mean long time? What kind of longtime customers do I have that are bringing in food stamps?
Well, you're saying this to customers that are there with their children. These are people that are in distress. These are very difficult economic times. You said so yourself. You know, I understand probably in your line of work, in your way of thinking, you are having it harder than they are.
Absolutely, I'm having it harder than them because I've got not only my mouth to feed and my girlfriend's mouth to feed, and I've got an ex-wife, and I've got two children by my ex-wife. I've got one baby by a young lady that I knew after I separated from Joan, and you know what I'm talking about, Phil, right?
Yes.
So I've got two with my wife. I got two with this the woman that I was with, and I've got one on the way with the girlfriend that I have now, who's also one of our checkers, and who wants to be Mrs. Bob Green. And I have said to her, I want to make you Mrs. Bob Green, but are you embarrassed about checking groceries? Well, just, you know, fill me in on this, because I don't understand. And she looks at me like, yeah. And so I have that pressure. I have a lot of different things. That
I don't understand what any of this has to do with. You're slicing up food stamps in front of people.
I'm saying that cutting the food stamps up relieves pressure and relieves tension. If I can look at a customer and I can say, I'm sick of looking at these, and I got to do this before I get sick of looking at you. And if they're there with their child, I'll say you and you. And, of course, if they're there with a husband or children, I'll say, I want to cut these up before I get sick of looking at you and you and you and you, depending upon how many people.
And so you take out this straight razor that looks like it's out of a horror movie.
No, that's what I said to a kid one day. Don't be dramatic, Phil.
All right, well, you take out a straight razor and you cut these things up.
Or I tell them I'm taking them up to the executive restroom and I'm going to use them for you-know-what, TP, and the kids laugh. Or I tell them that I'm going to use them as a jock itch problem.
And in other words, you're going to show an enormous amount of contempt for food stamps by wiping with them, wiping your armpits with them, cutting them up with a straight razor, and doing this in front of these people. And all of this allows you to release a lot of pressure and a lot of tension.
Exactly, but I don't have that release anymore. I don't even have that release. So while this debt deal may have relieved a lot of people, it hasn't taken any pressure off of me. I still got a high level of pressure, and it's even worse. So I don't know what they're talking about. And again, and you can hear, I'm in the middle of this party. I'm trying to be good to my employees. I've asked them a million times. Here comes a million and one. Would you move out of the way? Thank you. I'm trying to get something to eat. I got this. Well, I shouldn't say it. I got one of the checkers here. She's got the woman is big enough. She's blocking the whole table. I do all of this for my employees, and what do I get? I don't get anything. I get nothing. And so when I want to cut up some food stamps, and that's taken from me.
No one's taken anything from you.
Well, I'm saying that this debt deal, which is going, you know.
Hold on for just a second, Bob, while we take a break, as Robert Green talks to us about the debt ceiling deal, which has taken from him even the simple joy he had of cutting up food stamps in front of people because he didn't think the government had the money to back it up. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a guy who is in business, who is under so much pressure that he has taken to cutting up food stamps in front of the people to bring them into the store because he says they're not going to be worth anything. Now, with the debt ceiling deal in place and the government supposedly good for the money or the the resources that back up those food stamps. Bob can't even cut them up, so he says he's been deprived of some pressure release. Our name is Phil Hendry. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Robert Green got stress relief from tearing up food stamps, and now with the debt ceiling agreement, he can't even do that anymore. He did this in front of his customers. 877-876-PHIL, your calls and more of Robert Green next to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Your ass is blocking the table.
Call the Patriot Hotline. Dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Robert Green at Fraser Foods in Buena Park, which, by the way, I was on the Knott's Berry Farm website.
You've been talking about, why don't you come down here and we'll go to Knott's Berry Farm and we'll take you to dinner? And
we'd love to do that, you know. And how far are you away from Knott's?
Well, we're right near the medieval Times restaurant, and we're about a block or so away from the main entrance at Knott's Berry Farm. So you should come down here, and it's a lot of fun. But again, the Times are, if you've got the money to go to Knott's Berry Farm, good for you. I do, because I fortunately have put a lot of, hold on for a minute. I'm awfully sorry, Phil. Hold on. Would you get away from me for a minute? You're talking too much. You're talking too much. I got to.
Bob, we can do this at a later date.
No, I'm not going to do anything at a later date. I own the company. I got into an area here where maybe we can get just a little less. I apologize, Phil, but it has been just very crowded. Yeah, bring me some of that dip. Bring me one of those big sandwiches, one of those heroes. Huh? One of the big long sandwiches. The big long sandwiches. What do you call those, Phil?
Hey, Bob, we got an interview to do here.
I understand. What do you call the big long sandwich?
You call them a submarine?
That's it, a submarine. Give me that. A hero. We call it a hero, you know, or a tunnel. We called it a tunnel back east when I was growing up. Tunnel. A big long sandwich. Hold on for a minute, Phil.
What is he doing? But every time that we have that gentleman on this show, he's distracted.
I told him that he's supposed to stay on the radio with Mr. Hendry, and he's not supposed to.
I got the big long sandwich. God! I'm sorry, Phil.
You know what? You're not in any shape to do this interview. You know, I can reschedule.
No. Hold on. Hold the phone. You're not rescheduling anything. Let me tell you something, Mr. Hendry. You know I advertise with your show.
Yes, sir, I do. But I'm just saying, it doesn't sound like you're in any shape to do this interview.
Hold on. Come here for a minute. Phil, I tell you what. You got a record you want to play? Or
we don't play records.
What's that?
We don't play records here.
Well, I mean, if you have like a long record, you told me one time you used to put on, what is it, In Memory of Elizabeth Reed or Light My Fire, something like that?
I don't play records on this show. I'm doing an interview with you, sir. And the interview was scheduled earlier this week. And you're supposed to be talking to me.
I understand. Hold on. Just one second. Come here for a minute. You see this? This is a piece of bread. And this is a piece of bread. What do you put in the middle of it? Yeah, you put meat. That doesn't mean, and you know something, Phil, this kid, he's very slow. We got him from one of these projects. And I said put meat between these two sandwiches, and he did something that was very crude, and he frightened some of the ladies here.
Well, then the kid has no business. That child has no business.
Child? He's 30. What do you mean child?
Well, that gentleman, whoever he is, has no business working with the public like that.
Hold on. When I said put meat between these two pieces of bread, what'd you do?
I opened up.
You opened up, exactly.
You know, I don't want to hear this, Bob, and I'm going to hang the phone up right now if you don't stop with this conversation.
You're going to hang the phone up. That's what it sounded like. All right, get lost.
You know, you've got this manner, Robert, in dealing with your employees that I find, if I were one of your employees, I'd quit, to be honest with you.
Well, you're not one of my employees, Phil, and I have the business success to prove that my methods are sound.
And you have this young man who I take it is somehow developmentally disabled. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
All right. And this boy had, for whatever reason, he's a 30-year-old man, I understand, did something obscene through no fault of his own in front of the women.
I said put meat between the two pieces of bread. Between the buns. And I...
It's a big long shot whether we're coming back to that guy.
Yeah, but he's...
It's a big long shot. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
I told him to...
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Robert Greene with us in Buena Park, California tonight as we talk about the aftermath of the debt ceiling crisis, so to speak, and the legislation that came of all of this contretemps in Washington, D.C. Before this deal was done, Bob, you were not confident of the validity of food stamps. You were not confident of the validity of any government-issued check. Isn't that right?
That is absolutely correct, Bill. My feeling is the government, a check that the United States government issues now, it's very interesting because you hear people talking about, well, does the U.S. government, is the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, is it respected around the world? Well, I will tell you this. The Egyptians may respect it, and the French may respect it, and the British may respect it. I don't know who respects. I'll tell you who doesn't respect it. That's me and a lot of businessmen that I work with. So that when the government issues food stamps, I mean, you've got to be kidding me. And so people will walk in here, and during that crisis, when I saw any one of a number of people I know very well, the Blaylock family, Mr. and Mrs. Gutierrez, Jonesboro, Clements, these are all people that have been shopping here for years. And they all come in here with their food stamps. I said to them, you don't understand. I might as well take these and I might as well clean a cat's, excuse me for saying this, but I said, clean a cat's rectum.
Well, what's the point of being so crude? You know?
Well, the point, I told you that as a conservative, it gave me some sense. I was able to let off a little pressure. Not because I wanted to be cruel to them.
Oh, yeah, that's why. I don't believe that. Okay.
What do you mean you don't believe that? Who are you not to believe what I'm saying?
Because I don't believe that people walked in there with food stamps, and you said to them, you might as well wipe a cat's rectum.
I said clean a cat's rectum.
All right, well, whatever. And you don't think that you had no intention of offending anybody?
Phil, I'm telling you, I was letting...
No, I know you're letting off pressure, you're letting off steam, but there's only way that you can get emotional release like that is by confronting a human being and by throwing it back in their face. So that's why I say that I don't believe you.
Let me get over, Bob. You know something? You insult me.
And plus, you're saying now that the debt crisis has been relieved, you don't have... You don't have the opportunity to tear up food stamps in front of people anymore. You don't have the opportunity to release that pressure that way.
Hold on. Let me get Bob over here. Bob Ludwig. Bob, come here for a minute. Hi. Bob, Phil Hendry's on the phone right now. We're on his radio show. Do you listen to Phil Hendry?
Well, I don't know that I have. I like to listen to music, mostly.
Well, Phil Hendry's got a radio show. And Phil, this is Bob Ludwig.
Bob, how are you doing?
Hello?
Bob, how are you doing? It's Phil Hendry.
He can't hear you. Bob, hit the phone and put it up to your ear.
Hello?
Hi, Bob. It's Phil Hendry. We're on the air.
Hi, Phil.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's my birthday.
I want to ask something, Bob. Can you hear me, Phil?
I can hear you, yeah.
Because Bob has the phone now, so we're both kind of breathing into this. Don't you ever do that. Don't you ever do that again.
I just kissed you.
What happened?
I was using the phone. He had the phone, and I leaned in, and he turned and gave me a kiss on the cheek.
Well, that's a sweet thing to do.
Holloway, you get out of here. That's something a retard does. Don't do that.
Don't use that word on this show, please.
I'm sorry. I forgot. Anyway, Bob's going to talk to you. Don't do that, Bob, okay? It disgusts me. And I'm not gay.
I'm not gay either. I just felt like I owed you so much with my life.
That's very nice.
He's thanking you.
Hey, look, Phil, let's not turn this into some kind of a group hug, okay? Here's Bob Ludwig.
Bob, how are you?
I said I'm okay. I don't know how many times you want to ask me that.
Boy, what an ass. I mean...
Don't be rude to Mr. Hendry.
Bob, how much do you get paid?
Give me the phone. $41,000.
What did he say?
He told me he gets $41,000 a year.
That's a lie. That's a dirty, filthy lie. And I get $41,000. All right. Look at Phil. I don't think it's fair for you to be talking to my employees.
I'm trying to get a straight answer out of somebody on the show tonight. $41,000 a year, and a guy's been with you for 20 years, huh?
We are enduring very difficult times. And the difficult times that we're enduring means that I've got to lay off people. I've got to cut back on salaries. I have, and I'm under pressure. And the only fun that I get, the only relaxation that I get, because I don't take vacations, as the result of the pressure that I'm under, I don't mind telling you that I've had, in terms of my own marriage, we've had marital problems. And I'm not going to get specific, but you can imagine what that is. Can't you, Phil?
Yes, I can.
There's any number of problems. So the only joy that I had was when someone walked in here, with the answer by my hair.
You know something, Bob? Everything that you say speaks of a sadistic personality, an entitled and sadistic and racist personality, okay?
No. I am not racist.
With the Aunt Jemima hair. Isn't that what you said?
I meant to say the bandana.
What difference does it make? No wonder you're having a hard time with your company and with your employees.
Hold on for a minute. Bob, come here. Come on. Heat that soup up for me, will you?
You know the stew?
Yeah, heat the stew up. Thank you. Phil, all of the things that I've said in my time, don't heat it too long. Don't heat it too long. Get it out of there. Get it out of there! In the time that I have been with this company, and I've owned this company, poured into that bowl and put the napkin here.
What are you asking that guy to do?
He's putting a napkin in my shirt. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, I'm here with my employees. And what do you think they bring to work as part of Bob Ludwig's birthday celebration? They bring that stuff that they eat.
Now, what stuff do they eat?
I just heated it up. It's a stew. It's made by the Hispanic people.
Menudo.
Right, there you go. Give the man a cigar. It's got cow guts in it, tripe, and hominy. It's about as funky and hunky a thing as you're ever going to eat. You see what I'm going to do with it? I'm going to eat it. And you think that I'm an entitled guy? You think that I'm some guy that...
Bob, I'm not... I don't want to hear you give a speech. I heard you say that you relax by ripping up food stamps. Now you don't have that to enjoy because the debt ceiling has been raised, because the crisis is over, because you have to trust the United States government. They're going to back up these food stamps. So now what do? You're yelling at your employees during this birthday party. You're talking to this guy like he's your personal valet. You got him heating up soup for you. I thought this man was a manager in your produce department.
He is a manager. Hold on, I want to take a sip of this. Oh, God. Oh. God.
What?
Oh.
What?
Oh, God, I can't eat it. I can't eat it. Bob, please. Hi, Mr. Henry. Mr. Green is getting sick into the sink from the menudo. Are you there, sir?
I'm here, sir.
Yeah.
Give me the phone. The guy that brought that in is a guy named Ernesto. Now, watch this. I keep a taser, and I want you to hear this, because this is a great... Hey, Ernesto, come here for a minute. Come here for a minute. Bring in Harmony, huh? Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's 5 seconds.
Yeah. 5 seconds is right.
What did you just do to that guy?
Tased him for bringing that slop in. And I'll do it again.
You know something, man? You ought to be arrested for what you just did.
I ought to be arrested. He brought in that Menudo. Get him up. Get him up. Get him up. That's it. That's it. Straighten him up. Straighten him up. Yeah.
Send a cop over there for you. That's what we ought to do.
What's that?
Send a cop over there.
This guy brings over Menudo with cow guts in it. What have I done for this, for the people here?
Mr. Henry, this is Bob Ludwig, the produce manager.
Yes, sir. Was that man really tased?
He was, but it wasn't a taser in the sense that it was shooting darts. It was a hand taser, and this guy Ernesto makes a big deal out of everything. He's okay. He's standing up and laughing right now.
Well, what was he doing?
He was going through an act, but Mr. Green is now, he's out of the room. I can tell you that we're having a nice party, and I'm sorry that you have intruded, or you haven't intruded, but you've walked into the middle of this. There are things that I could tell you. Things, please, Mr. Green, not for those.
Guys talking? I just stopped him from talking.
You ought to be put in a jail cell. That's number one. Then
go ahead, and a nut house?
Yes, and a nut house.
All right. What else?
You know something, Bob? I've heard you tase people. I've heard you tell some guy not to kiss you on the lips. I've heard you...
What law was I breaking there?
I don't know, but it's your mind is coming unraveled ever since you haven't had food stamps to tear up. That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds to me like you're right. Like the pressure is so great, you're tasing people. You got a guy putting Menudo into a microwave and then you're spitting it out into a sink. You're telling people that you want... What is that?
I'm heating up some of that Menudo. It's not bad. Yeah, that's good stuff. So, what I'm saying is...
So the Menudo's good now, huh?
It's fine. I mean, how good can cow guts be? The point that I'm making is that as long as we have a crisis financially in this country and the pressure continues on business people like myself, then I'm going to have to find a way to relieve that pressure. And when I can't even tear up food stamps in front of somebody and throw them back in their face, then
the pressure is on you. And that person, of course, there's no pressure on them.
What pressure is going to be on a guy like that?
Because the humiliation of having his own food stamps thrown back in his face while the kid's standing there.
Well, the kid, come on, Phil. I mean, we all know. We all know that there's no bull in there. There's nothing in there. Oh, I'm sorry. You see what I'm talking about?
You know what? If you had any kind of couth and if you had any manners, you wouldn't be doing this while you and I are trying to have a discussion about what this... What the economy...
Is there a bowl in there now? But it's not full of anything. Take it out. You tell me.
If you're hiring people that stupid, that's your problem.
No, you tell me when I tell the guy to heat me up a bowl in Menudo, I said heat up a bowl...
And he put a bowl in there.
Yeah, but first he didn't put anything in there.
I'm sorry.
You got to put something in there when you turn the microwave on.
I understand.
What's in there now?
A cup.
Is there anything in the cup?
Oh, I forgot. Hold on.
You see what I'm dealing with? And you tell me that I am cruel, and you tell me that I'm wrong, and you give me speeches about how I'm going to... Now, okay, hold on a minute. Is there something in that bowl?
Yes, sir.
What is it?
It's like some cereal.
That's not what I want, is it? What did I ask for?
Oh, some of the Menudo.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Bob, if you're hiring people that are that dysfunctional...
If I don't do it, who's going to do it? And you're giving me a hard time. So I hire some guy who doesn't even know that when I say I want a bowl of Menudo, he put a bowl of corn checks in there. But I'm a bad guy.
I admire you for helping the disadvantaged. I admire you for helping people that are disabled. But you can't turn around and get angry at them, and then you're tasing some guy that brought Menudo in.
Oh, he likes it.
Yeah, he likes it.
All right, what do you got in there?
I got Menudo in there.
But that's just a cup. It's a teacup, see?
Oh, okay. You want more?
Yes, I said I want a bowl of Ernesto's Menudo. Go get it, put it in a bowl. Okay?
Yep.
This is what I'm dealing with.
And so, in other words, all of the pressure that you're under, because you have these people that are disabled like this, and this gentleman sounds as if he has some mental defect.
Oh, yeah.
This is the guy that's been with you 20 years.
Well, yes, he's been with me 20 years, but you'll notice he's gotten dumber as in the last 20 minutes. I don't know what that is. But he has, literally. When he first started talking to you, didn't he sound okay?
He sounded fine, yeah.
And now, what do you got? What did you do?
I've got the bowl of menudo.
You got to cook it. You got to, see what I'm saying, Phil? He got the menudo in a bowl, and he just put it on the counter, and he was staring at it.
So he doesn't, you got to remind him of all these things.
Yes. Put it in the microwave, and then start the, there's the baby, there you go. Yeah, see? Isn't that fun? No, that's not long enough.
Here's a menudo.
That's not long enough.
What is?
That menudo is not, you didn't put it in. Hold on for a minute, Phil.
You know, I got to take a break.
You're always got to, I got to take a break. You know what? I need a break from life. How does that sound to you? I need a break from life.
It sounds to me like you're under a lot of pressure, but tearing up.
Now, keep it in there. So what I told these, that's not long enough. It's cold. It's ice cold.
All right, I got to take a break.
Yeah, you take your break.
I mean, Robert Greene is having a birthday party at Fraser Foods. He's talking to his employees. He has varying levels of function and dysfunction there at where he works. On top of everything else, he's under pressure because of the economy. On top of everything else, the only way he can let off steam is tearing up people's food stamps in front of them. And now he can't even do that. And now he has a guy that's been with him for 20 years, and apparently the man is so out of it that he doesn't know how to heat up a bowl of menudo in a microwave. And he's been with him 20 years, and he's got four kids. 877-876-PHIL. Steve Bozell, next hour, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. To call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
I don't have a lot of time to fool around with this.
I'm not fooling around with anything. What do you mean, fool around with what?
You and I have been on the air here for an hour. I've been trying to get to the bottom of how your business is doing.
Well, my business is doing fine, but that's because I'm having to cut back on overhead by hiring people that don't know how long to microwave soup. I don't know how else to put it to you, Phil. I've been trying to go as slow as I can. And
what does microwaving soup have to do with working in your grocery store?
What does microwaving soup? It has nothing to do with it, Phil. Nothing. But I would think that any human being would know how to microwave soup. And if you don't know how to microwave soup, then what is that? Look at this. He's trying again. How many times has this been, Bob?
About 10. This good?
No, it's still cold. You see, so another 10 times, and maybe it'll be warm enough for me to enjoy. But until that time, I can't enjoy it at all. And that's the part that...
All right, but here's what I'm saying. You've had to cut back on overhead. That means you're hiring people that are less qualified. I thought this guy, Bob Ludwig, has been with you for 20 years.
He has. Bob has been with me for a long time, Phil. But he has, as many people have in this economy, he has... His intellect, his ability to think creatively, his ability to do normal things has eroded over the years because the money isn't there. You don't have any interest in your job if you can't make more money. It is a normal human desire to make more, to have more resources. And if you know, you're getting dumber, that's because there's no...
What do you mean getting... I don't understand what you're saying. You're saying...
You don't speak English, I guess.
I speak English. Yes, I do.
Well, then what is it that I'm saying that you don't understand?
I don't understand how a guy's intellect erodes over 20 years.
There is no incentive for this man. I can't afford to pay him more.
So therefore, he forgets how to microwave soup. So therefore, he forgets these basic functions of life that he ordinarily knew how to do.
I guess. I don't know. Look at him. This is number 15. I don't know.
Is this warm enough?
No, it's still cold.
Well, you know something? He's had it in there so many for so many minutes. It's got to be warm.
Well, maybe there's something wrong with it. Hold on. Yeah, there's a fuse blown. It's not even heating anything up.
Well, then that's not his fault.
Well, it is his fault that he didn't figure it out. I had to look, didn't I? I'm going to go outside, Phil, because I what I want to do is I want to wrap up this segment. I want to give you a couple of ideas on what's going on. Number one, I'll just leave this behind.
That's what you should have done at the beginning of this interview.
Well, I'm so sorry, Mr. Don Hewitt. Next time we do 60 Minutes, we'll try to do it better.
I'm just saying that's what you should have done.
What I want... Hold on.
If you say hold on to me one more time, I'll hang up.
I'm sorry, hold on a minute. Bob, take my briefcase, put it on my desk, and take this menudo and heat it up in the microwave that works.
Okay.
What I'm saying is this, Phil. The time that it takes for me to train new people, the amount of money that it takes for us to train people and then to get them into a situation whereby we can say to them, now here, the hell is...
What happened?
What was that? Huh? What? What did he do? He put in the briefcase in the microwave. He put the laptop in the microwave.
Are you an idiot? You told me to do that.
No, I didn't. I said put the menudo in the microwave and put my laptop on the desk. He put the...
Phil.
No. No.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And welcome back to our show for hour two. And of course, we have our news and information hour coming up at our third hour. And if you join us online at philhendryshow.com, you've got not only thousands and thousands and thousands. Yes, I said thousands. Thousands of hours of archived radio, great radio, trend-setting, awe-inspiring, jaw-dropping, head-splitting, atom-splitting radio.
Atom-splitting?
That's right. I said atom-splitting.
You mean like an A-bomb?
Yeah, like an A-bomb. There, go ahead and think about that. Don't play it back to me, okay? Just think about it, all right? I don't need for you guys going, atom-splitting. Just listen to it, okay?
You're talking about an A-bomb.
Yeah, that's what I said. An A-bomb. Like that exploding microwave, okay? Just leave me alone for 5 seconds. Do you mind?
No, go ahead. I was wondering.
Thank you. Now I forgot where I was.
I'm talking about splitting the atom.
Yes, splitting the atom years ago. What?
You said it was atom split.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Atom splitting radio. So join us over there at philhenryshow.com. Enough of that. Warren Jeffs' prosecution has arrested their case after playing an audio sex tape. Are you listening to this? An audio sex tape of this animal having sex with his underage wives. Now, Steve Bozell is going to join us to talk about that and his work environment and his work situation in just a moment. Mr. Bozell is a father. He is a husband. He is a business owner in Corona, California. We'll talk to him in just a moment. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And again, we are online at philhenryshow.com. Now, before we bring on Mr. Bozell, let me get my Warren Jeff story here, because, I as they say, truth is stranger than fiction, and the world that we're living in is increasingly bizarre. I'm not necessarily saying it's worse, because here's the funny thing about it. As we get smarter, we learn things. And as we learn things, we think that these things never existed before. Well, yes, they did. It's just that we didn't know they were there. I had a conversation last night with a guy who was upset with me because I had said I didn't buy the autism vaccine link. And he said, "Do you realize, Mr. Hendry, that the incidence of autism has gone up since the 1960s? And I said to him, "Sir, people didn't even know what autism was in the 1960s. They didn't know what it was they were reporting in the 1960s. Maybe they didn't even report it as autism in the 1960s. Maybe they thought the kid was deaf. Maybe they thought the child was brain damaged in some other way. Do you understand? It has to do with knowledge and information. That's the most important aspect to this. So when we talk about these things, that's what we're talking about. Now, Warren Jeffs' sect, it broke off from the mainstream Mormon church 72 years ago, and it has more than 10,000 followers who consider Mr. Jeffs a prophet who serves as God's spokesman on earth. Sect teachings emphasize polygamy as a key to exaltation in heaven. And in other words, it's a big con job so that men can have sex with children, and that's what that's all about. And the Mormon, probably the biggest mistake that the Mormon church ever made in their long and illustrious history was this polygamy thing, because all it did was give perverts, you know, for all the heat that gay men have taken, for all the heat that gay people have taken about, you know, recruiting, the Mormon church, the biggest mistake they ever made was playing this polygamy thing, because all that did was invite pervert after sick bastard after sick bastard to join that church and have sex with children. Now, I'm sorry, but that's, you know, that's how I feel about that. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Stephen Bozell, sir, how are you?
Well, Phil, I'm doing the best I can under the circumstances. I'm glad to be with you.
And Steve, you, as a father, you've been following this news out of Texas. We also have, I think, do we have any audio on this, Jason? I'm not sure if we do or not, but we've got a number of, we don't have the audio sex tape, I understand that, but we have a number of other pieces of audio we're going to play. There's no audio, okay. But this tape, when you heard about this man recording sex he was having with underage women, what was your reaction?
Well, Phil, I'm trying to keep my, as a lot of men would, I'm trying to keep my temper and my emotions in check. I've got a 12-year-old daughter, and I can tell you that I think any parent who thinks of children being manipulated in such a fashion that they are no longer children, but they are the wives, they're the child brides of, you said it, Bill, I couldn't have said it better, of these very sick and perverted individuals. To me, I don't think there's a place in hell hot enough for them. And I heard the news today. I was on a job site. I'm a construction contractor by trade, and I was on a job site in Diamond Bar. We were putting in a business park, and we were in the initial stages of framing. We were using a wood frame, and I was up on a second story helping one of my framing carpenters. And I had just gotten out of my truck where they had released this information that an audio tape exists of this man, Warren Jeffs, let's just call it what it is. I mean, sexually assaulting this young lady. And I was so disturbed by this that I was on his 2x4. I had slipped.
Yes, I heard you were injured today.
Well, I slipped and I fell about a half a story. It wasn't that far. Unfortunately, I came down on the 2x4 with one leg on one side and the other leg. That could be a very, very...
You went down spread eagle on this 2x4.
Yes, sir, I did.
And you could be seriously injured that way.
Yes, sir.
How are you? But you're all right.
Well, we went to the emergency room, and the doctor looked at me, and sometimes you can have blood vessel damage. Sometimes you can have a loss of blood to that area, but fortunately I was all right. But I was so...
You were that disturbed by this news that this man had recorded this sex, if you call it that, with this child.
Yes, sir. And you can well imagine any man knowing that there's an audio tape of that. And, of course, the thing that disgusted me more than anything else is that I was wanted to hear it. And I think, you know, any normal guy, or maybe not a normal guy, but I was very disturbed with myself that I wanted to maybe hear it. And I began to think about it. I thought, maybe I want to hear it because I want to hear and have information. And I felt better about myself when I knew that. But then there's another part of you, you know, where you think you want to hear it because there's a part of you that, you know, I want to you know, hear about it and everything. And
what do you mean hear about it?
When I was up, I was working with Dean Price, who is one of our framing carpenters. And Dean, and I'm up on the second story, and I started thinking about Warren Jeffs. And I started thinking about him being with, you know, him having a tape recorder on, and he's, you know, going, doing what he's doing. And I started just kind of thinking what it sounded like. And that's when I slipped and and I went spread eagle down on the 2x4, and I felt that I could probably sue him, but then I realized that was probably ridiculous.
Well, let's take this one. Somebody's car alarm's going off. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I do hear that. I think it's probably one of my guys. Somebody's car alarm's going off. One of the things
Let me just take this very slowly. You were so distracted by knowledge of this tape, and I can understand that you were distracted to the point that you lost your footing on the job site today, and you fell, and could have been very seriously injured. I mean, you fell spread eagle onto a 2x4, and was some kind of a...
Well, it's a support beam that we had put in for a section of a garage. So it wasn't really a 2x4, it was more like 2 2x6s.
And, oh, my God. So that's, you know...
Yeah, it was painful, but I was lucky. But my feeling was that I was so distracted thinking about it that I could sue Mr. Jeffs for what he did.
And what he did was what?
What he did was he had sexual assault written all over it with a 14-year-old girl, and then that tape goes out, which he knows sooner or later it will go out, and I'm going to hear it, and a lot of men who are like me are going to hear it, and we're going to want to, and we will be affected by that. And
I want you to be very clear with me here so that my audience understands. When you say you will be affected by listening to the Warren Jeffs tape, if you ever do hear it, and you already were affected by the knowledge of it.
That is correct, yes.
What kind of effect will it have on you?
It's going to have a very destructive effect. There's no question about it. It will destroy and I think this is the worst part about it, Phil. I think Warren Jeffs having sex with a 12-year-old and having that tape recorded and having that be made public out there into the public area, that will destroy all of my decency. If I ever hear it, and even thinking about it now, I can feel that my decency is being, you know, slowly destroyed.
And what do you mean your decency is being destroyed?
I mean the clean way that I think. And so that's what I'm saying, why I would sue Warren Jeffs, and I would sue the whole Mormon church, too, and here's why. And you said it. If they hadn't allowed polygamy, then they never would have allowed Warren Jeffs. And if they had not allowed Warren Jeffs, then he would not have allowed himself to have sex by allowing a 12-year-old to be married to him. And I would not have my decency, you know, compromised.
And so, in other words, Mr. Bozell, you're afraid that in hearing or even the knowledge of this tape, you are being corrupted?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
And other men are?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
And you feel this is a foundation for a lawsuit?
I absolutely feel it's a foundation. Not just a lawsuit against Warren Jeffs, but a lawsuit against the entire Mormon church for allowing polygamy, which then blossomed into this sex, you know, into this whole sex episode. So.
All right. Hold the line here. Stephen Bozell with us on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at 877-876-PHIL. So... Is the Mormon Church exposed here? Can they be sued for allowing, in the first place, polygamy, which gave rise to the abuse of children? And then, the bigger question, can a man like Mr. Bozell or any man who feels personally, morally compromised by the knowledge of these tapes, is he entitled to damages? Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Steve Bozell here, the world-famous... Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is the show where truth is our bitch, and we go places, talk shows, other talk shows wish they could and they can't. And with me here is Mr. Stephen Bozell of Corona, California. Now, Steve, I have here the news story. In an audio tape played today at the trial of polygamist Warren Jeffs, jurors heard the religious leader allegedly having sex with a 12-year-old and telling her to feel the spirit of God.
Yes, sir.
Is Mr. Bozell there?
Yeah, I'm right here, Phil. I'm sorry.
Okay. The recording was the final piece of evidence offered by the prosecution before resting its case in the sexual assault trial against Jeffs. Jeffs, the leader of this radical sect of Mormonism, known as the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. When you talk about suing, you don't just want to sue the fundamentalist the fundamentalist branch.
No, I'm talking about suing the master, you know, what you call the mother, father, the master. The master computer.
What do you mean the master computer?
Whatever you call, forgive me, Mr. Hendricks,
The main church.
Yes, sir. The overall church, I guess. I wish I had a better term for it.
Well, it's the fundamentalist is they split off from the main church.
Right. This car alarm is. I got to get Hector or Hector. Would you find out whose car that is? And
we've had a lot of distractions on our show tonight, sir. So if you could keep. Just kind of stay focused with me.
I apologize, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So you're talking about suing the Mormon Church and the fundamentalist sect of this church because of this tape.
The reason why I want to sue is because, as you said, if the Mormon Church at its very beginnings had not allowed to have multiple sexual partners for its main men. And that right away it exposes normal men, such as myself and such as just regular men, such as you, Mr. Henry, or any of the men listening to your program. It exposes us, and we stand like on the outside looking in. This idea of the outside, my attorney, Dolores Blazingame, said that this idea of the outside looking in, we're standing there almost in a humiliating pose. We're standing there with our noses pressed against the glass. And our hands, you know, shoved in our pockets like any guy that you'd see in a dirty movie. So
I don't feel that I'm like that, though, you know?
Well, I know you don't feel that way, but that's the way that my attorney and I feel in many ways. I feel that's the situation we've been put. We are on the outside looking in, looking at these men having sex and doing it and getting to do it. Also with, I mean... I'd be arrested. You'd be arrested.
And rightfully so.
I'm sorry?
And rightfully so. And this guy's been arrested, too.
Well, that's true. However, I'm glad that he did get arrested, but I'm also thinking, and maybe there's a lot of men out there thinking the same thing, that what I hear about him having sex with, like, a young, you know, something young, you know, I'm thinking, wow, you know, I where do I get a hold of a copy of that tape? But
you find yourself thinking those thoughts you said to me, and then you think what?
I feel that I'm disgusted with myself. I'm disgusted with myself. And I'm so disgusted with myself that I know that I've been forced to think like that by the Mormon Church.
This is where I think your lawsuit may have some problems, because while you're disgusted with yourself, and I can tell you right now, and I'm not making this up, there's nothing about this guy or these tapes or those children. There's nothing about it that I find that even remotely interests me in a prurient way. Okay?
Well, sir, you know, Mr. Ray, that doesn't make you better than me.
I don't think I'm better than you. I think that you need to get that checked out. If you are listening to these tapes and...
I haven't heard any tapes.
That's true. I apologize. But if you're... The idea that these tapes exist, and you're saying to yourself, wow, you know, I'd sure like to listen to that.
Well, I mean, and here's what separates me from you. You're a member of the media, sir, and you are a gentleman who has been... in the media, and you go to, and you're all in the middle of the media, but regular men like myself, guys that are listening right now, I think you need to understand that we will hear about a tape like this and probably want to check it out or something, because we've been inundated and bombarded with the brainwashing that goes on.
Well, I don't know how you can speak for other men.
I'm speaking for other men, because how do you not
say, and that's what I, and that's why I said, you know, to my wife, I said, I'm going to go on the Phil Hendry show tonight, and I'm going to say that there's a very real possibility that Warren Jeff's tape is going to make me feel hot, or maybe. And
are you listening to what you just said? The Warren Jeff's tape is going to make you feel hot?
No, not him. I'm not talking about him.
Well, what are you talking? You talking about the 12-year-old?
No, I'm not talking about the 12-year-old. I'm saying the whole situation, I'm on the outside looking in. And
you're on the outside looking into a crime being committed.
Yes, sir, but you're putting it all in words that sound good. And
well, what would you like me to say?
I'd like you to see how the average guy sees it. Not you, the talk radio man, but the average guy. I'm sitting out here. I've got a wife. She's had two children. My wife's figure. I don't think it's ever going to come back. I don't think it's ever going to come back. And so, you know.
And so, because your wife's figure isn't going to come back, anything is of prurient value?
I'm saying that what they did was they say there's a tape of Warren Jeffs having sex with something young, and I'm all, you know, I mean, it's infected me to the point where now I want to, you know, send away for it.
Well, look, man, you know, you're never going to get a hold of that tape unless you get it in through some nefarious means or some black market or something like that.
But that's just it. I want to get a hula.
Okay.
Slow
down. Are you all right? Do you need some water?
Yeah, hold on. I got to get some water. Hold on for a minute. Would you tell whoever's car that is to shut that down? You got to shut it down now, man. Shut it down. Shut it all the way down.
Hold on for a minute, okay? We'll be back with Stephen Bozell on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, The Warren Jeffs. This sexual assault on these children has been recorded and was played in court.
Phil Hendry.
I want to get a Honda. I want to go to Honda.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Stephen Bozell from Corona, California, a construction contractor, a father, a husband, and a concerned citizen who is contemplating a lawsuit against the fundamentalist sect of the Mormon Church, but the entire Mormon Church, because the thinking here, and this has been vetted through your attorney, I assume, Steve, is that the Mormon Church in and of itself is responsible for this aberrant thinking and aberrant behavior because they tolerated polygamy, correct?
And a lot of people would say, well, does that mean the Catholic Church is responsible for, a torture because at one time, you know, Torquemada and the Spanish Inquisition. So, and of course, no, it doesn't, because we're talking about fairly recent history. We're talking about, no more than, 150 years ago, they encouraged their men to go out and, you know, have sex with I have a hard time, and I have had a hard time, sir, since this story broke. I have been under doctor's care.
And why, sir?
It has been emotionally distressing for me, and I've been under a doctor's care, and as a result, I've had to take anti-anxiety medication. I've had to take some antidepressant.
You have been affected, like, you have been personally affected?
Yes, sir, I have, you know.
All right.
So I've had to take. It's difficult for me to say. It's difficult for me to just even say the words that Warren Jeffs had sex with a teen.
Well, what is easy for you to say?
Well, he had sex with a congregant. And
well, it's not that, but you know that's not descriptive.
No, I know that.
That's not descriptive at all. He had sex with a 12-year-old girl. He had sex with a child, and I think that we have to say that. And we have to, because that's the depravity. That's the depth of the crime, you know?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So you can't say that Warren Jeffs had sex with a child?
Warren Jeffs had sex with a Chang. Warren Jeffs had sex with Chang. With General Chang.
What do you mean General Chang?
Chang.
What? Let's go back to, because if you're on medication for this.
Well, and this is the depth that it's affected me. Not only am I on medication, but I find myself wanting to send away for it.
That's the part that bothers me. The fact that the tape has, you say, eroded your morality. It has eroded your sense of decency. You find that you are, this is almost like, as you know, we've mentioned on the show before, the Heart of Darkness, Colonel Kurtz, you know, where you suddenly your civilized veneer is scraped away and there's nothing but an animal underneath. Is that what you think is happening?
Well, you mentioned Heart of Darkness. Now, that was the film Apocalypse Now. And on that movie, if you've seen the man, the bald one, he went mad. And
yeah, the Colonel Kurtz, played by Marlon Brando.
Yes, and so he went mad, and he was all, just everything was wrong. And then they sent the Green Beret, and that was Martin Sheen, and he was told, you know, terminate with extreme prejudice, terminate with extreme prejudice. That's what they said in the movie. And the whole reason to do that was because Colonel Kurtz had turned into an animal, and I feel like the same thing has happened to me and a lot of American men when we hear about Warren Jeffs tapping into, you know, he gets the taps and...
Gets the tap. You know, you're talking like you're a teenager, and some guy, you know, went out with the prom queen and slept with her or something, you know?
You're right. What I meant, but it's still interesting. And
so, in other words, you are disgusted with your own fascination and, dare I say, attraction?
Yes, sir. But I'm not attracted. I'm disgusted with myself. As you can well imagine, if a guy says, boy, Warren Jeffs put... He had sex with a...
All right, let's say congregant, then.
He had sex with a congregant, and there's a tape of it, and you want to, you know, get a hold of that. You know, and I said, man, you kidding me? I'd get that. I bet you make some copies of that. And
all right, listen, so in other words, what you're telling me is this whole thing, this tape, this assault, this sexual assault of a child to you, is something that you would trade with other guys, that you would listen to, that you have a prurient interest in, and you're disgusted by all of that.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right.
How do I know this isn't just you saying this to let yourself off the hook? You're going to turn around and sue the Mormon Church.
Look, Mr. Henry, I've been on antidepressant medication. I'm on anti-anxiety medication. I can't even say what he did because I'm so excited by it and yet disgusted that the two worlds collide. The two worlds of me being interested in what Warren Jeffs tapping on a Friday night, and I'm sorry putting it that way.
See, that to me, that's the crude part of that.
I apologize. What Warren Jeffs did, or what he had, and also the world of me being a clean and wanting to be clean and stay clean. I want to stay clean. God, how I want to be clean. And I want to have a life where God has his mercy shines on me, and I don't want to have to walk in the sewer. I don't want to walk in Satan's sewer. I don't want to stroll down the road and have the devil just any time he wants me to come into a filthy, you know, into a filthy room and look at a dirty picture. And that's what my life has been. And so I feel as if I need...
I got to interrupt you, okay?
No, I want to say I feel as if I need the cleansing. The cleansing that only comes from a lawsuit. And yes, I need the cleansing. I need to get cleaned up. I want to be able to say something. I want to be able to say Warren Jeffs had sex with Tad Taddy. I can't say it. I'm on medication.
It sounds to me like you're having a nervous breakdown, sir.
I could very well.
It sounds to me like you're having a nervous breakdown, that this story has affected you in a way that I don't think it's affected anybody that I know. And it sounds to me like you're having some kind of an episode. You need a doctor. Yes, you do need medication. Have you taken your medication today?
Yes, I have, but sometimes it's not powerful enough to stop me from the worlds, when worlds collide. If you saw the science fiction, Mr. Henry, it came out in 1958, when worlds collide. And in that movie... I forget what it was about, but it was just about worlds colliding, you know. And
yeah, I know the movie.
All right, well, the world of me wanting to be clean is colliding with me wanting to go into the devil's, just walk into the devil's draw poker game and sit down and just get dirty with the devil. I don't want that to happen.
And look, you're a father and a husband, and you are an employer. You have a business. You have a family to look after. You need to look after yourself. This has affected you in ways that this is new for me. Okay, so you cannot allow this to happen, and I think we're done talking to you, sir. Okay.
No, sir, because I'm still going to file a lawsuit.
No, you can't file a lawsuit. The lawsuit is the least of your worries. The lawsuit is not going to help you. You've got other problems here.
What are you saying?
I'm telling you, you got other problems. That's what I'm saying. In other words, you have an emotional problem here. It's got nothing to do with whether you're going to sue the Mormon Church.
But the Mormon Church, by allowing a guy to go ahead and fly blind. And
what do you mean, fly blind?
When you allow a man to date an underage girl.
I've never heard that term.
Well, sir, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You're so disconnected from this. Warren Jeffs has been flying blind for God knows how long. He's tapping into every fruit bowl.
I don't care about the terms you're learning how to use, okay? I'm saying you need a doctor.
All right, but I can't even say that Warren Jeffs is having sex with a tooth.
You got a problem, Jack. You got an emotional problem. You can't say teen. Is that it?
I can't say teen.
You can't say underage girl?
I.
What can you say, congregant? Can you say girl?
Girl.
Say Warren Jeffs had sex with a girl. Say it.
Sir, Mr. Henry, please.
I said to say it.
Warren Jeffs had sex with a goon.
And what was this General Chang thing?
Well, I was saying that Warren Jeffs had sex with a tang.
It came out.
It came out
Warren.
Okay, so I mean.
Okay, so you couldn't say General Chang.
No, I said General Chang. I meant to say teen. Oh, I just said it.
Get out of here before I kick some ass.
I think that guy's putting you on.
Really? Well, good luck to you, Mr. Bozell, in all of your endeavors as you attempt to say the words teen and General Chang and have them both mean what they're supposed to mean. By the way, the lawsuit that you're contemplating against the Mormon Church and against the fundamentalist sect of the Mormon Church, it's a good idea, but I would not be filing it while you're still hospitalized.
Yeah, they'll probably tell a guy filing a lawsuit is in a rubber room.
Yeah, you don't want to file any lawsuits when your return address is a soft room. So, you know, we'll be right back here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget our website is philhenryshow.com. Still to come tonight, Lloyd Bonafide and Margaret Gray checking in on the news of the day. And our video cast at philhenryshow.com. Get your backstage pass. See you in a bit.
Radio.
In a bit.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the
General
Phil
Chang.
Henry Show.
Hello, General Chang.
Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and a news talk and entertainment show that goes places other talk shows wish they could and they can't, and a news talk and entertainment show, well, quite frankly, it's the only news talk and entertainment show that is really a news talk and entertainment show and isn't just a horse dung show. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that the other shows aren't telling the truth sometimes. Now, what are we looking for here, bud?
You were looking for a Bubba Smith video and everything.
All right, we're going to get a Bubba Smith video for next hour. Bubba Smith passed on this very day, and that's a significant event for people, I guess, in my generation. Younger people who are the younger football fans, you have your, well, we all love football, and I love to watch the game, but Bubba Smith played in an era when I was younger, and he was one of the prototype pass rushers. He also went on to a great career as a comic actor in the Police Academy series, and I was trying to remember if it was him and Els and Burt Jones that did the light beer commercials. Robert, you don't know?
No, I thought that it was L.C. Greenwood, you know.
L.C. Greenwood might have been the guy that did the commercials with Burt Jones.
Yeah, but he's black, so you think the guy looks the same, and that's not fair.
Well, who told you to butt in?
Well, that's not true, is it?
No, it ain't true.
Well, then, Burt Jones, was it Burt Jones or was it Joe Montana?
It was Burt Jones because he's older than Joe Montana. He didn't play in the same era, okay?
Right, was it Burt Jones or Roman Gabriel?
I'm going to smack you in a minute. Anyway, we'll take a look and we'll find out who it was. Anyway, RIP, rest in peace there, Bubba. We'll talk about Bubba Smith next hour. This is an interesting story because we often talk about perception being everything. And that is, if the perception is one thing, it doesn't matter what you meant, the perception. I'm not talking about someone propagandizing what you said. I'm not talking about someone purposefully twisting what you said. I'm not talking about somebody making you look like an ass knowingly, even though you shouldn't be made to look like an ass. I mean that when you choose your words poorly, sometimes people perceive it to mean something different than what you wanted it to mean. And you have to accept that. You can't go through life saying that you were victimized by, you may have been victimized by stupidity. You may have been, my God, if that was a crime, being victimized by stupidity, we'd have to put the entire human race in jail. Sure, we've all been the victims of a stupid person or two, but that's life. Really, what you have to do is avoid that. You don't want that to happen. If someone's perception is that you said one thing when you meant something else, and that is their honest perception, you got a problem there, Charlie. You didn't articulate yourself as well as you should, and so therefore the meaning was something different. Now, I don't know if this is the case here, but MSNBC may be seen as Fox News for liberals, but its contributors have recently made a habit of saying not-so-nice things about President Barack Obama. Pat Buchanan, a Republican presidential hopeful, that was, what, this year? They got to be kidding.
No, I think they made it back in the 90s.
Pat Buchanan ain't going to get elected. He wouldn't get elected a hall monitor, man. That guy was, he was a presidential hopeful, and that's underlining the word hopeful, back in the early 90s. He turned MSNBC pundit after he got his ass kicked. He raised some eyebrows when he referred to Obama as your boy when he talked with Al Sharpton on Tuesday night. Now, after a discussion on how the debt deal would affect the political futures of the Republicans, MSNBC fill-in host Sharpton said the Republicans should throw in a white towel, an apparent boxing reference indicating the Republicans should give up in their fight with the president. Seeming to continue, well, now, what about the white towel thing?
Well, that's not racist.
What do you mean that's not racist? I'm not saying it's racist, but what's with the white towel? Throw in the towel. I've heard that term.
Yeah, throw in a white towel.
I never heard anybody say throw in a white towel. I've heard him say throw in a towel. But that's just me, okay?
That's what I'm saying. You said it about perception.
You're right. You're right. Anyway, an apparent boxing reference indicating Republicans should give up in their fight with the president. Seeming to continue with the boxing analogy, Buchanan called Obama your boy to Sharpton. The host replied, my what? And Buchanan said, your boy in the ring. Sharpton continued the discussion and continued the boxing analogies, even making references to Muhammad Ali and boxing strategies. Immediately, some critics took issue with the comments by Buchanan. Julia Bodeeb of Gather.com called Buchanan a disgrace to America for the horrifying use of the word boy. She is calling on MSNBC to fire Buchanan and stated it is truly sad that members of the GOP are using hate speech to try to demean the president. Natasha Leonard of Salon.com wrote, no one should use racially loaded terms to refer to the president. Pat Buchanan especially should not get away with it. During his initial Morning Joe appearance on Wednesday, Buchanan said he wanted to clarify what he had said to Sharpton during a spirited discussion. He insisted he was using a boxing analogy during the discussion. Some folks took what I said as some kind of a slur. None was meant, none was intended, none was delivered. On Morning Joe, Buchanan was appearing alongside political analyst Mark Halperin, who was making his first appearance on MSNBC, a month after being suspended for an off-color remark about Obama in which he called the president, quote, a dick, end quote. All right. Let's listen to some of this audio if you want to, and then we can talk about this. We don't have a whole hell of a lot of time, but here's Pat Buchanan. I guess this is part of the exchange, And to give the conversation some context, here is MSNBC host Al Sharpton. He starts the discussion by suggesting the GOP should throw in the towel in their fight against Obama.
But look at the poll today that came out where the American public, 60% disapprove of the fact that tax increases are not limited. Maybe President Obama was a little smarter politically than some of you thought.
Look,
you don't want to separate yourself now, Pat. You were saying
let me tell you
5 minutes
you
ago
they
got two-thirds. Now you're down
you
to maybe I'm right. I'll be seeing a white towel thrown in a minute.
And let me tell you, your boy, Barack Obama, caved in on it in 2010, and he'll cave in on it again.
My what? My president, Barack Obama? What did you say?
He's your boy in the ring.
No,
he's
nobody's boy. He's your president, and he's our president, and that's what y'all are going to get through your head.
I don't need to hear anymore. I don't think that, you know, look, at Buchanan is what Buchanan, if you don't know what Buchanan is by now, did Buchanan mean that racially? I don't believe so. However, when Pat Buchanan delivers the word boy with this inflection.
And let me tell you, your boy.
Pat Buchanan is a northerner and a southerner. Your boy. When Pat Buchanan, a guy who wrote a book basically making Hitler's arguments for him on why World War II wasn't necessary. I read the book. I interviewed Pat Buchanan, and that's all that book was. It was an ignoramus argument. It was a rehashing of Adolf Hitler's rationale for not going to war against the British. Pat Buchanan was the culture warrior. So Pat Buchanan, if ever there was a guy that has a perception problem, it's him. And if ever there was a guy that ought to know there's a perception problem, it's him. Now, if he doesn't give a damn, if he wants to be misunderstood, that's fine. And he can scream and yell and cry about how people are not understanding him until the cows come home. Even after he gets fired, he can scream and yell about it. You can do that, or you can accept the reality of how people see you and try to shift the perception a little bit. Buchanan doesn't make that effort. Now he's talking to Al Sharpton, who fixed a political point in the universe as there is. There's no mistaking what Al Sharpton's about. There's no mistaking what Al Sharpton's going to think, and there's no mistaking what Al Sharpton is going to take offense to or what he's going to like. You can't miss it. And now you're Pat Buchanan. Now what are you going to do? You want to piss him off? Are you stupid? No.
Let me tell you, your boy.
Okay. Anyway, Pat Buchanan, the perception, Pat, is that you are what you are, man. So you've got to watch that. I don't know if he's going to get canned, but it's just one more. You know, it's just one more thing that makes Pat Buchanan look like a slob. All right, we'll be back here on the Phil Hendry Show right after these important announcements.
Your boy.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. If you're looking at our Phil TV in HD, you're looking at a Bubba Smith light beer from Miller commercial that we were rolling a couple of those during our commercial break. Bubba Smith has passed on, as I mentioned, as a football player. He was more a part of my generation. When I was a teenager, it was all about Bubba Smith. It was all about Joe Namath. It was all about, you know, John Brody. It was all about the Green Bay Packers and the New York Jets and the Baltimore Colts and the emergence of the Dallas Cowboys. And so this great ball player has passed on at 66. We'll talk about that and his career, not only as a football player, but also as a fairly successful actor in the Police Academy movies. However, we're going to start out with D.B. Cooper, bud.
Yeah, this story is bitching because it gets more, there's different things about it and everything.
Yeah, he knows that, man. You don't have to explain that to him. All right, but he's entitled to his opinion, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody making a big deal out. They ain't found this guy yet.
Well, let's find out. D.B. Cooper exclusive, okay? That's what it's called. And the only way you can say that it's an exclusive, I guess, is because Reuters has it. So I guess Reuters is, if you'll pardon the expression, blowing their own horn. And they say they've got an exclusive. Did the niece provide key evidence? Well, a woman claiming to be the niece of the mysterious skyjacker dubbed D.B. Cooper, who bailed out of a jetliner 40 years ago with $200,000 in ransom money, says she recalls her uncle plotting the sensational caper at a family gathering in 1971. Yeah, right.
You think it's bullcrap?
I don't know. Marla Wynn Cooper, age 48 of Oklahoma City, said on Wednesday that she was the person who furnished investigators new clues to a previously unknown suspect, sparking a renewed probe of a case the FBI counts as the only unsolved hijacking in U.S. aviation history. Now, in an interview with ABC News, Marla Cooper says she believes her uncle is D.B. Cooper.
And let me tell you, your boy...
That's freaking Pat Buchanan, you smartass.
My uncle LD was wearing a white T-shirt, and he was bloody and bruised and a mess. And I was horrified. I began to cry. I asked them what happened. They told me that they'd been in a car accident. And my other uncle, who was with LD, said, Marla, just shut up and go get your dad. And I ran inside the house, and I was spying on them from around the back of my grandmother's house. And I heard my uncle say, we did it. Our money problems are over. We've hijacked an airplane. They told my dad they wanted him to help them go back into the woods and find the money.
Oh, this is the biggest load of crap I've ever heard in my life.
Why do you say that?
Because nothing adds. We did it. We hijacked. Nothing adds up. Now, this is the memory of a little girl, okay?
Well, yeah, but why do you say it's a load of crap?
First of all, let's just say she remembers everything right. We did it. Our money problems are over, but you got to help me go back into the woods to find the money. All right. Well, what does that mean? That's number one. And number two, LD, huh? Well, isn't that interesting? The guy's got initials, and this guy is DB. So, and the biggest thing is this. She says she's the one that talked to the FBI. Anybody from the FBI acknowledging that that's the woman?
Well, yeah, but they acknowledged the guitar strap.
I don't care if they acknowledged a guitar strap. Did you hear what I asked?
What?
Does anybody from the FBI acknowledge that this is the woman that they talked to, or this is the person that they talked to?
I don't know. I don't think so.
All right. So this is some person who says, oh, yeah, I'm the one they talked to. And my uncle LD, you know, I don't buy it. And I've been wrong before, but I just don't buy it.
Well, why do you say you don't buy it, man? This is a possibility you're going to have it solved. And you're bumming everybody out.
I don't care if I'm bumming everybody out. I'd rather tell the truth or at least give my honest appraisal of something than just jump on a bandwagon like you, bud. And
I'm not jumping on no bandwagon.
Yeah, you are. You go, ooh, wow, look, man, I just found somebody. Ooh.
You kind of are, man.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying it. What she says makes sense.
There's nothing she says that makes sense. Are you nuts? There's nothing she says. First of all, the woman's 48. That means that 38, she would have been 8 years old in 1971, 9 years old at the outside. All right, that's fine. I'm not saying that you can't remember things when you're 8 or 9 years old. But it's very interesting, the things she heard. She heard just enough for it to sound like, wow, you know, all of our money problems are over. But you got to go back into it. It's almost like someone saying, all of our money problems. Oh, wait, I forgot. The story says that they lost the money in the forest. Well, we got to go back into the forest. Well, how do you know your money problems are over when you lost all the damn money? I would have been pissed off. I wouldn't have been talking about how our money problems are over. I would have said, if I said anything to anybody, you know. This guy let a little girl in on this. This guy let in at least two other relatives in on this. Talking about how our money problems are over and we got to go back. So there's three people at least that within hours of this thing, he has opened his big fat mouth to and everyone knows. Okay, now here's a question for you. This little 8-year-old girl, she's had this information her whole life.
Yeah, but if she's a little girl, she's not going to go to nobody. She don't know nothing about it.
Wait, hold the phone here for a minute there, Smarty. She gets older and becomes an 18-year-old girl. Then she's a 28-year-old girl. Then she's a 38-year-old girl. Now she's a 48-year-old girl. And all of a sudden, she had an uncle named LD who came out of the woods, and he was beaten up, and he was battered, and he was this, and he was that. And he said, we got to go back and get the money, but our money problems are over just as soon as we find the money. And, oh, yeah, sure.
Man, you're too cynical, man. I mean, there are a lot of ways that you could figure this one out.
There's a lot of ways it could be figured out, Robert. I'm not saying that. But this is too pat. I don't like it when I can tell, if there's one thing I can smell, it's somebody who's full of crap. All right? I'm not saying that this lady is lying. I'm saying there's stuff that's not adding up. This sounds like something right out of the... Remember when the... let me give you an example. You remember when that anthrax thing was going around?
Yeah, but when Bin Laden done it, or what they thought was...
It wasn't Bin Laden, and I knew it wasn't Bin Laden. From the very first day that they found that anthrax, I knew it wasn't Bin Laden.
Why?
Because Bin Laden doesn't know enough about American culture to send it to Tom Daschle in the National Enquirer. Osama Bin Laden wasn't going to be sending no anthrax to the Enquirer. And if anybody was thinking straight, which they weren't, they would have known that if anything, it was domestic. Because only an American knows the significance of a target like Tom Brokaw, Tom Daschle, and the National Enquirer. Only an American understands the significance of those targets. Not a foreigner, and damn sure not a guy in Al-Qaeda. Now we come to this present moment here with D.B. Cooper and his so-called niece. Now, the FBI hasn't confirmed that this was the woman. Maybe it was. She says that, we can listen to it again if you want to, but she said that she heard these guys come, and she went around the edge of the barn, and she was eavesdropping. Uh-huh. And it just so happens that at the moment she eavesdropped, she heard a guy say, that's it, our money problems are over. Oh, well, that was pretty fortuitous, wasn't it?
What's that mean?
I mean lucky, okay?
Well, what was that fortuitous?
Lucky, 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 lucky. Oh, and she also heard as she snuck around the edge of the barn that our money problems are over, and oh yeah, you guys got to help me go back in the woods and find it, and then our money problems will be over. That sounded just completely made up. No guy is going to be all thrilled about his money problems being over when he just lost whatever the hell it was, 200 grand. He would be irate. He would be frantic. Now the woman tries to tell us, after she snuck around the barn and heard this lucky stuff, now she tries to tell us that for 40 years, none of this stuff added up in her head. None of it made any sense, even as an adult. Looking back and having these memories, none of this stuff even remotely approached something that she would mention to somebody else, maybe law enforcement, anybody. And all of a sudden, here she is talking about it to Reuters or ABC, saying that she's the woman, and so what is she trying to, blow the investigation? I don't think the FBI said to her, oh, and by the way, feel free to go out and talk to the media about it.
Well, what do you mean by? They would they?
No, they would not. I don't think it's very likely the FBI is going to say to her, thank you for talking to us. And by the way, if ABC or anybody calls, oh yeah, sure, go ahead and talk to whoever you want about this. That's just fantastic. What do you think they would have said?
They tell her not to talk.
Okay, they tell her not to talk. Now why would she turn around and talk?
Because she wants to get paid for an interview.
She can get paid for an interview anytime she wants. She's the niece. She's the one that heard it. She's the real deal. She's got the information that nobody's got. Sooner or later, she can get, she'll get her interview. But in the meantime, the FBI might, and I think it's entirely believable, the FBI would say to her, please don't talk to anybody until we get all of our ducks in a row on this thing, until we look at the evidence. But she goes out and talks to people. Why? I'll tell you why. Because she ain't the real niece. I don't think she's related to anybody. I don't think she heard anything. I don't think this woman has got anything to do with this.
Yeah, well, how come ABC then getting fooled about that?
I don't know. I got to find out. I got to figure this one out. Anybody can call anyone and claim anything. And when you are in this day and age where news, I heard a guy say this the other day, and this is so true. News is no longer news. It's a product. News, you know what that means? It means when you go into the store, there are different kinds of products. And the way you are packaging it, the way you price it, and the way it smells, and the way it looks, and what store it's in, that determines whether you're going to buy it or not. Now, it doesn't make any difference whether it is really the best product. Most of the time, we buy the product because it's got that nice packaging and it's got that nice price. And that's the way we shop for news these days. We are not necessarily hearing the truth. We're just hearing what we want to hear.
Yeah, no, nobody's that stupid, though.
Yeah, oh, is that right, bud? Okay.
Well, what are you saying, man? You saying people are that dumb?
No. Far be it from me. If that's what you guys want to believe, you go right ahead. You go right ahead.
So what are you saying? Saying she's not the real one?
No, you guys believe whatever you want to believe. ABC is in a rush to get out and get news, just the same as NBC, just the same as Daily Beast, just the same as Bart Bright, just Bright Bart, or who went Bart. Bart Bright was a gunslinger.
Bat Masterson.
Bright Bart, just the same as our good friend Matt Drudge, all of these guys. And these cats are going to say whatever they got to say, do whatever they got to do, lie to whoever they got to lie to. People don't get it, man. People still think there's something that news has something to do with truth. All right, we'll be back with more and varied things here on the Phil Hendry Show, including the news about Bubba Smith. We also have Lloyd Bonafide coming up in our next break as he talks about the return of Gabrielle Giffords and whether or not she's going to run for re-election on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number 877-876-PHIL. We had a spirited discussion, Jason and I, just a moment ago about this woman. Now, forgive me, but Jason informed me of the fact that sources close to this story confirmed to CNN and to ABC that this was indeed the woman who spoke to the FBI. The FBI hasn't said yes or no. CNN has not had this confirmed to them by the woman, and ABC has not had this confirmed to them by the woman, but a source close to the story confirmed it to CNN and ABC. And that could be a member of the FBI. So it could very well be that's the woman. I still don't necessarily believe her story, and it could be at the very end of this whole thing, the FBI may turn around and say to her, now wait just a second. You're saying that you heard a guy say this, and you heard a guy say that, and you heard somebody say something else, and you're 8 years old, and this and that, and this and that. I wonder, because it can't be this garbage that we just heard, I wonder what it is this woman said that made them believe that this was important enough to spend a year on it. Because it wasn't this jackass conversation she claims to have heard. No way. No way. Anybody can say that. And I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just how I feel about it. Lloyd Bonafide joins us from Alhambra, California. Mr. Bonafide, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm doing fine.
And, you know, I might as well get your take on this.
What do you think about it?
Hold on, bud. I'll ask the question.
Who was that? Was that Dickman? You know, this young man had me on the phone. I'm going to talk about that.
Hold on for a minute. Hold on. What are you doing?
I want to know what he thought about D.B. Cooper.
That's not why I'm talking to him.
He came on and he said, what do you think about this D.B. Cooper? I said I didn't come on the program to talk about D.B. Cooper. And he said, well, I want to know. We're doing a poll. And I said, I'll bet you're doing a poll. And that's when he used the dirty word. And
what did you say to him?
I swear to God, I didn't say anything. I just said you shouldn't talk like that.
Oh, you're a lying retard, if ever. Excuse me for saying that, Phil.
Watch the language, all right?
But he's lying. He said we're doing a poll on D.B. Cooper, and I said, I'll bet you're doing a poll, which probably was unnecessary of me, and so please forgive me.
That's all right, I understand.
Oh, yeah, it's all right for him. It's not okay for me to tell him to sit on it, and, you know.
Oh, so that's what you told him.
There you go. He told me to sit on it. Now, let me tell you something about who I am and what I'm all about.
And hold on, if you wouldn't mind, Lloyd, did you tell that man that?
Yeah, because he said, yeah, I'll bet you're doing a poll.
He was kind of rude.
Now, hold on for a minute. May I say something?
Go ahead.
I'm a Korean War veteran. I fought for this country in Korea in 19... Oh, God. I'm running out of oxygen. I'm so angry.
Take your time.
I'm a Korean War veteran. when some guy says to me, we're taking a poll, otherwise you don't get to be on the radio, mister, you better have a good reason for saying that.
And did you tell this guy that he couldn't be on the air until he answered your D.B. Cooper question?
All I said was that before he put him on, the one to ask a question, I said, we got a poll. And he goes, yeah, I bet you do. And I go, why don't you sit on it?
That's about how it went.
You don't have to do it. Okay, you don't have to answer any questions, sir.
No, well, I wasn't going to answer any question. No one questions me. No monkey. And I can tell you, Mr. Henry, I am an 80-year-old man. No monkey ever questions me.
Pick a tense.
I am a devoted husband and father and grandfather, and I'm a retiree.
Yes, sir.
And no monkey tells me we're taking a poll, and why don't you sit on it?
I understand.
And by the way, my daughter lent me her credit card because I won't use my own credit card for this kind of thing, but I bought a membership in your backstage area. And
what are you laughing at, bud?
He bought a membership to your backstage.
Yeah, for me.
You see what I'm talking about?
All right, hold on for a minute. Both of you guys shut up. I don't want to hear one more comment out of either one of you while I talk to this man. Go ahead, sir.
I bought a membership to your backstage pass, and I looked on the camera there, and I saw you laugh when I said sit on it. So, Mr. Henry, I don't miss much.
I apologize. It was the way you said it, okay?
Well, apology accepted, but I will tell you, I am very emotionally, this has been a very difficult period for me.
I understand, sir. Now, you are here with us tonight, Mr. Bonafide, as a veteran, as a Korean War veteran, and you said that the address in the House of Representatives by Nancy Pelosi and other members of the minority leadership left you emotionally ragged.
Yes, because at that time, and I was watching it with great interest when she then introduced, and I had the sound turned down because, and forgive me, but I cannot listen to that woman. It is a very difficult thing for me to listen to this Pelosi.
Yes, you're not of that political stripe.
No, sir, I am not. No, sir, I am not. So when she said, and I don't know what she said because the sound was turned down and my wife had it on, she'd had it on this other program. And I said, put it back on the other program. And that's when I saw what appeared to me to be a young Korean woman who suddenly was being, was having her hand shaken, and everyone was patting her on the back and kissing her you-know-what. And I asked myself, who in the name of the Almighty is the Korean? And it turned out it was the Gifford woman. And I said to my wife, Frank Gifford? And she said, no.
You know, it was Gabrielle Giffords.
Yes, that's what my wife said.
And why would you say Frank Gifford?
I had not. There was no connection to reality. I had no, in other words, Gabrielle Giffords, I remember that young lady. But the person I saw was a Korean.
What do you mean a Korean?
The haircut. Oh, boy. The only guy, you guys got some pair on you to tell me that you're taking a poll and I ought to sit on it when you didn't see that.
We got to take a break. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show.
Hey, I'm not done yet.
Phil Henry. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
It is the world-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and all over the country on affiliates across this big, big, badass country of ours. And you are certainly welcome to tune in via our affiliates or our evening video cast. It's all there for you at philhendryshow.com. Our podcast is daily. So people say, do you do a podcast, Phil? Yeah, we do a podcast. The show. How about that? That's our podcast. So tomorrow, with a backstage pass, the podcast is automatically downloaded to your pod, and you're ready to rock and roll. We also have our video casts. We also have thousands of hours of archive material. We also have our webcasts. We also have two new features, the Bobby Dooley and Ted Bell blogs. Ted's of Beverly Hills, of course, the exclusive steakhouse that is owned and operated by Ted Bell. He is now doing a blog, as is Bobby Dooley from the Western States Homeowners Association. It's all there on our homepage at philhendryshow.com. Now, if you're looking at our video cast tonight, you see there a very classic black and white photograph from Super Bowl III. It is the leaping, gargantuan form of Bubba Smith, number 78, wearing the blue shirt and the white pants, as he is bearing down on the equally classic form there of Joe Namath, number 12 of the New York Jets. It was a game that the Jets won. It was the biggest upset, probably to this day, the biggest upset in professional football history, as the upstart American Football League suddenly found themselves on a par, an equal partner with the National Football League by beating a Colt team that year that was 13-1. 13-1, and the Jets came in and forced five turnovers and shut the Colts down pretty much 16-7. Bubba Smith was a big part of that. Ogden Nash was a poet, an American poet who was famous for these little snippets of poetry. I don't know if you know Ogden Nash, you probably know what I'm talking about. He actually wrote one about Bubba Smith. He said, "When hearing tales of Bubba Smith, you wonder, is he man or myth?" Ogden Nash. Bubba Smith was an outsized presence in the National Football League, who went on to a prolific career in television and in the movies. He was found dead on Wednesday in his home in Los Angeles. He was 66 years of age. He was a young man. I mean, by modern standards, that's not necessarily an age that you expect people to just, you know, go out. The cause was not yet known, a spokesman for the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office said, adding there is no indication of anything other than a natural death. He was 6'7". He wasn't quite 300 pounds. So that's a whole lot of muscle, 6'7", maybe 6'8", some sources cite. He was a defensive lineman. He was the number one draft pick for the Baltimore Colts in 1967. He spent nine seasons in the NFL, playing on two Pro Bowl teams in 1970 and 1971. And in 1971, he helped propel the Colts to a 16-13 victory over the Dallas Cowboys in Super Bowl V. He was traded to the Oakland Raiders before the start of the 72 season. He played two seasons with them. He wound up his career with the Houston Oilers and then retired in 1976. Now, afterward, Smith made a career of playing rather large men on film and television. He was best known for his role as Moses Hightower, the mild-mannered florist-turned-lawman in the film Police Academy and many of its sequels. He starred in the short-lived TV crime series Blue Thunder and had roles on many other shows, including Good Times, Charlie's Angels, Semi-Tough, Heart to Heart, Married with Children, and Family Matters. He was also seen in a well-known series of Miller Lite commercials, and if you remember these Miller Lite commercials, they featured all kinds of celebrities, all kinds of sports stars. And in fact, we were just looking at one of them. It was the famous Miller Lite camping trip. And I don't know if you remember this, but it was like in the early 80s, they had Bubba Smith, Dick Butkus, Red Auerbach, Mickey Spillane.
That's that writer.
Yeah, Mickey Spillane was a mystery writer. Corky Carroll, the surfer. Boom Boom Joffreon, who was a hockey player. I mean, Tommy Heinsohn. They had everybody in this commercial.
Who was that blonde?
Who's the blonde? The woman?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, who was she?
I don't know. She was just an actress. She's just an actress that was the... She was Mickey Spillane's girlfriend. That was the whole thing, right? He was a mystery writer, so he had all the girls.
So she wasn't... It wasn't like Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. No, it wasn't Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe was dead 20 years before they made that commercial.
Oh.
Boy, you guys really are clueless, man. You know that?
Well, I mean, I'm just... You said I had all these famous people...
No, it wasn't Marilyn Monroe. Don't you even know that Marilyn Monroe died in the 60s? It wasn't Marilyn Monroe.
What about Jane Mansfield?
It wasn't Jane Mansfield. It was some blonde. I don't know who it was.
So Jane Mansfield got her head cut off.
Yeah, that's right.
No, she did not get her head cut off.
Yeah, they did. They had that on the TV.
She never, that was bull crap. You guys are going to make me get pissed. I'm going to start swinging. I'm losing my voice.
You always say you're going to start swinging.
Tonight I'm going to. That was a wig. That photograph of the Jane Mansfield accident scene shows a wig, not that poor girl's head, like so many stupid bastards said it was. That was not Jane Mansfield's head. She was not decapitated in that accident. And that's a terrible thing that that rumor lasted for so many years.
Well, you said that's a wig, man. I swear to God, I see like a nose.
Don't you see a nose or anything?
What do you mean you see a nose? You get me that picture. And I'll tell you something else. I'm not going to argue with you about it because the police verified that it was a wig, wasn't her head. And so it goes. Just don't bother me right now with it, okay? I'm trying to finish this story, you jackasses. Who was the blonde?
Well, you said if somebody's famous.
I didn't say she was. Okay, it was Ann Coulter. You happy?
I knew it. You owe me $5.
Boy, you go. Man, I'm going to tell you. Anyway, Charles Aaron Smith, known since childhood as Bubba, was born in Beaumont, Texas on February 28, 1945. His father coached the high school football team in which he played. The elder man's techniques, Bubba Smith told the New York Times in 1971, included whacking his son with a board he brought to the field for that purpose. What redeemed these episodes, the son said, was that he didn't holler. Smith played defensive end at Michigan State, where his size and prowess gave rise to the chant, "Kill Bubba, Kill," which emanated frequently from the stands. He was named an All-American in 1965 and 1966. As a senior, Smith took part in what came to be called the Game of the Century, one of several games so designated in the annals of college football. It was played at home against Notre Dame on November the 19th, 1966. Smith sacked and knocked out Notre Dame quarterback Terry Hanratty in the first quarter, and the game ended in a 10-10 tie. Smith was the author, with Hal DeWind, of the book Kill Bubba Kill, published by Simon & Schuster in 1983. And this was an interesting book, because in it, Smith intimated that Super Bowl III, in which his highly favored Colts lost to the upstart New York Jets, was fixed, although he supplied no evidence. Smith's assertion drew fire in the news media. Information on Smith's survivors was not available. He has a brother, Toady. People will remember, played for the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Oilers. He was named to the College Football Hall of Fame in 88. They retired his number in 2006 at Michigan State. And for all of his acclaim, Smith, drawing on the teachings of his father, was philosophical. He taught us to be humble off the field, Smith told the Times. Instead, I got to feel I'm the best inside. But if I tell you I'm the best, then I'm a fool. That's Bubba Smith.
Say that again.
Inside, I've got to feel I'm the best. But if I tell you I'm the best, then I'm a fool.
Who?
Bubba Smith!
I understand.
All right, so there you have it. Bubba Smith. Gone, but not forgotten. And I guess Mr. Bonafide's gone, isn't he? You know, that is really a tragedy, man. It really is a tragedy.
Well, I mean, he was giving me a hard time.
That man was scheduled to be an interview on this program. I wanted to talk to him. I wanted to talk to him about his experience seeing Gabrielle Giffords. Instead, you guys give him a bunch of crap about we're taking a poll, okay?
Well, we want to find out if people thought, you know, because you were saying everybody believed one way, and we didn't know.
Well, that's all fine and good, but do you guys know that there's one other person to take into consideration when you are doing your thing behind the scenes on the phones with a guest?
Yeah.
Me. I got things I need. I got things I want to get done. You talk to that guy and you pissed him off to the point where I never really did get into anything in depth with him, other than the fact that when he looked at Gabrielle Giffords, he thought she was Korean. You know.
Well, the way she cut her hair.
Great, but I'm not interviewing you, am I? I wanted to interview him. Now, I want to know what happened.
I told you. I said we're taking a poll, and he said about what? And I said we're going to take a poll about, well, I forget what it was, but it was about what you were talking about, okay, about D.B. or that man B.B. Cooper or D.B. Cooper?
Right.
And I said, I want to get a poll. And he goes, yeah, I'll bet you do. I go, yeah, well, you'll probably want to sit on it. And he goes, and he said a dirty word.
Wait a minute. You said what?
You got to say it right.
What do you mean?
You said we want to get a poll?
Yeah.
Well, what is that supposed to mean? If you want to say I'm going to take a poll, that means you want to ask the guy some questions, right?
Yeah.
You said I want to get a poll.
Yeah, but why did he say, I'll bet you do?
Because he thought you were being a smartass. So you put it the wrong way to the guy. He took it the wrong way. You guys get into a big argument, and guess who loses? I do. I'm the guy that's got to sit here and suck wind because this cat got so flustered, he couldn't get into any in-depth discussion of Gabrielle Giffords. When he finally did, she had a haircut like a Korean, and that's all I got out of him.
Well?
Now, don't give me the well. It wasn't enough. All right, we're going to come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget, our merchandise at the Phil Henry Show store enables you to sit and drink big shots of alcohol out of the Phil Henry Show shot glass and listen to this fall-er-all each and every night. All right, coming up, did the Earth have two moons at one time? That's one theory. Also, Casey Anthony is headed back to Florida. That's another theory. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. And that's
Radio,
theory number
for
three.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
World famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome back with us here, where truth is our bitch. Now, get this. I don't know whether this is a bitch or not, but there's a new theory that the Earth at one time didn't have just one moon. We had two. We had two moons. There were two moons out there in the starscape, if you will. It is a theory and a spectacle that might have beguiled poets, lovers, and songwriters if only they'd been around to see it. Earth once had two moons, astronomers now think. But the smaller one smashed into the other in what is now being called the Big Splat. All right, the result, our planet was left with a single bulked up and ever so slightly lopsided moon. Now, the astronomers came up with a scenario to explain why the moon's far side is so much more hilly than the one that is always facing Earth. The theory outlined Wednesday in the journal Nature comes complete with the computer model runs showing how it might have happened and an illustration that looks like the bigger moon getting a pie in the face. Outside experts said the idea makes sense, but they aren't completely sold yet. This all supposedly happened about 4.5 billion years ago, long before there was any life on the planet Earth to gaze up and see the strange sight of dual moons. The moons themselves were very young, formed about 100 million years earlier, when a giant planet smashed into the Earth. Boy, all kinds of stuff was going on before there were any human beings.
Well, how come there weren't any human beings around?
Well, it isn't that how come there weren't any human beings around. It's that there couldn't have been any human beings around.
Why?
Because we couldn't have existed in that environment. We were only able to exist. Human beings were only able to evolve. Animal life was only able to begin to evolve when things calmed down. Otherwise, there wasn't going to be any life because there was all this stuff going on, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it right there. Now, give me that, okay? Get a copy. Get your own copy. This all supposedly happened about 4.5 billion years ago, long before there was any life on Earth to gaze up and see the straight side of the... Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you said that.
I know. Anyway, the moons themselves were young, formed about 100 million years earlier when a giant planet smashed into Earth. They both orbited Earth and sort of rose in the sky together, the smaller one trailing a few steps behind like a little sister in tow. Whatever. Anyway, the smaller one was a planetary lightweight. The other was 3 times wider and 25 times heavier. Its gravity so strong that the smaller one just couldn't resist even though it was parked a good bit away. They're destined to collide. There's no way out. This big splat is a low-velocity collision, said a study co-author Eric Asfung, a planetary scientist at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Now, Santa Cruz, of course, is where most of the hippies went to school, and their school mascot is a banana slug, so take that under advisement. Now then.
Well, no kidding, man.
When Asfung... I'm kidding around, but I mean, it's true. There's a lot of weirdos there. Anyway, what Asfung calls a slow crash is relative. It happened at more than 5,000 miles per hour, but that's about as slow as possible when you're talking planetary smash-ups. It's slow enough that the rocks didn't melt, and because the smaller moon was more than 600 miles wide, the crash took a while to finish, even at 5,000 miles per hour. Asfung likened the smaller moon to a rifle bullet and said people would be bored looking at it because it's taking 10 minutes just for the bullet to bury itself in the moon. This is an event. If you were looking at, you'd need a big bag of popcorn. But I don't know what these scientists, man, you know, they're just not jazzed by anything other than the end of the world, maybe. Anyway, the rocks and crust from the smaller moon would have spread over and around the bigger moon. So this has all got to do with this all has to do with geology, and it has to do with the relative topography of the moon. So if there is a radical difference, and what we learn, what geologists here on Earth learn when we see a radical difference in a topography in the surface of the Earth from one place to the next, they have theorized that this is where there has been a collision. For instance, the Alps. The Alps and the Matterhorn specifically are the meeting point, literally, between the continents of Africa and Europe. At one time...
what are you talking about, man? There's nothing but Swiss people there.
Yeah.
There's nothing but Swiss people there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you said Africa...
There's no African there.
So there's nothing but Swiss people, so there couldn't be Africans there. So that's, yeah, you guys are right. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Will you listen to me for a minute? I'm talking about before there were people.
Oh, well, you said that was Africa, and all they got are them people at Yodel.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but there ain't no yodeling.
Be quiet and quit trying to make jokes.
I'm not.
There ain't no yodeling in Africa, huh? Well, maybe there is. You ought to check into that, Robert. See if any of your ancestors yodeled.
Yeah, maybe they yodeled in a canyon. And
will you don't get away from him. I'm talking about before there were people, okay? So the Alps represent the point where Europe and Africa met and smashed together and formed that mountain range we call the Alps. Same thing with the Himalayas. The Himalayas are the result of literally the subcontinent of India smashing into Asia, before there were humans. So when you see that radical change in the way the Earth looks, the topography of the Earth, geologists theorize there was an event. There was a collision of some kind between one type of landmass and another type of landmass. There can't be any people in Africa. There's no Swiss in Africa. What is it that you guys are trying to say? Why don't you just listen to what I'm talking about, okay?
You said it was Africa, and then you said it was Switzerland.
Well, maybe there's some guys in Africa that wear little hats with feathers in them, man. Look into it. Anyway, co-author Martin Jutzi of the University of Bern in Switzerland said the study was an attempt to explain the odd crust and mountainous terrain of the moon's far side. There you go. The other story we wanted to tell you about, Casey Anthony can continue her undercover life for now after a judge ruled Wednesday she does not have to immediately return to Florida to start serving her probation for check fraud. A hearing on her probation was set for Friday. Judge Belvin Perry said Anthony won't have to show up for that either. A different judge ordered Anthony to report to Florida on Thursday for her probation, but the judge later recused himself and turned the case over to Perry, who presided over Anthony's murder trial. Anthony's been out of the public. By the way, did you see that story about Belvin Perry had an affair?
Yeah, I saw that, man. That woman, man, they must have paid her a lot of money.
That they had this story in the National Enquirer that Judge Belvin Perry, one of our heroes, he was a bad boy.
He had an affair with a white lady, too. So, I'm just saying.
He had an affair with a lady about 7 years while he was married. Boy, get a load of you, Judge Perry, man, getting around, huh?
Yeah, that woman, he must have dumped her like a bad habit. She had nothing good to say.
She did. She ripped into him. She ripped into him good. She was like, question his morality. I always find that kind of interesting. I mean, I'm not saying the judge did the right thing there. There's no question that the guy was cheating on his wife. But why are you squeaky clean, honey? What'd you do? I mean, you know, if he hadn't dumped your ass, you probably would be, for all I know, you'd probably be still sitting in your chalet there in Switzerland trying to figure out what happened to all the Africans.
That ain't funny, man.
Oh, take it easy. That's it, folks. We'll see you again tonight here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget, our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Dan Northcraft. And our associate producers, Chris Johnson and Fred Scotty. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is also available online at philhendryshow.com. Check out our videocasts and also, of course, our videocast archive, a 5-day videocast archive on our homepage. Check out our news feed. Check out our archives. And then you can check out a happy person. I mean, check out the ultimate checkout. Not
Not like a supermarket.
Yeah, not like a supermarket checkout. All right, kids, until then, this is Phil Hendry. See you tonight. Same time, same station, same Bud, same Robert, same Alps.
Phil Hendry.